And here to break down not only the Browns and the draft, but all things Browns, we've got Scott Petrek with the Chronicle-Telegram and BrownZone.com. Scott, thank you for the time, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
So far, so good. And I guess we can begin right there. We are just about a week and a half away from the NFL draft, and clearly this year it's got a much different feel to it. And you know, we've been hearing some noise the last few days about the possibility of the Browns trading back into the first round next week. As you take a look at that potential scenario, which teams do you think make the most sense there on paper for the Browns to trade with to get back into the first round?
Well, it would have to be somebody at the bottom, because the Browns just don't have, in my opinion, enough collateral to move that far up in the draft, or not only that, would want to move. We would want to give that much up. You know what I mean? So if they're going to go into the first round, I think it's, you know, maybe from 25 to 32, somewhere in there. And, you know, the Raiders have a bunch of picks. They have another pick at 27. So I could see that as a possibility. You know, John Dorsey has a history with the Chiefs, and they drafted 29. And then you get the Patriots at 32, who historically like to move down, right? They like to kind of stockpile the picks and would seem to be open moving from 32 to, let's say, 49. So, you know, those are the teams I would keep an eye on. But I think it would still cost the Browns a significant amount to move up those, let's call it 17 to 20 spots. You'd have to give up number 49. You'd probably have to give up a second-round pick next year, and then something else would be my guess, whether that's Duke Johnson or maybe a third-round draft pick.
And we are in the midst of the NFL draft silly season. You're going to hear a lot of rumors, and you're not exactly sure how much of it to actually believe. You know, no NFL general manager is going to show their hand at this point now that we're, again, just about 10 days away. But you have any idea who they might be targeting if indeed they do trade back into the first round? Are there any guys out there you get the feeling that maybe they really like a lot? And as you mentioned, there's a lot of draft capital they'd have to give up in order to get back in there.
Well, the guy that jumps out to me is Jeffrey Simmons. He's a defensive tackle from Mississippi State. And, you know, John Dorsey has been asked about him a few times, really defends the kid. But there's issues with Jeffrey Simmons. And even before we get to those, I'm not sure he's going to be there at the bottom of the first round, number one. Number two is he tore an ACL working out in February. So he probably won't be able to play at all as a rookie. So if you're going to give up, let's say, you know, two number twos and maybe even a Duke Johnson, to get a guy that's not going to play as a rookie, you have to be in love with that guy. So, you know, but I know that John Dorsey likes him a lot. He considers him either top five or top 10 talent in the draft. So I think he'd have a lot of decisions to make. He'd have a lot to weigh if you're going to move up for that. And not only does Jeffrey Simmons have the ACL, in high school there's a video of him punching a woman repeatedly on the ground. And now he's defending family members, and there's a big fight. And I just talked to people. I talked to his high school coach today. I talked to his college coach at the end of last week. And they both say he's a good kid. That was an isolated incident. Hasn't had any issues since. So that's all things that NFL teams have to weigh. And it just would be interesting if John Dorsey moved up to get that guy, because he's kind of a lightning rod with the incident and then the ACL. If you take Simmons out of the equation, I think you got to focus on positions. And cornerback, I could see John Dorsey wanting to add to that position. He really hasn't addressed it in the offseason. I think he'd like to add somebody to Denzel Ward and Terrence Mitchell and T.J. Carey. So maybe that's the move, you know, if you trade up into the bottom of the first round. You know, Lane is a kid from Michigan State. It's Justin Lane. He's from Benedictine. You know, he played at Michigan State. He was a receiver for a while. I think he's a talented guy that has some upside. So those are two names that I would watch out for. But I think the positions for sure are, if you're going to move up, it's either defensive back or defensive line, because I think that's where Dorsey wants to add the depth the most.
Scott Petrak with the Chronicle-Telegram and BrownZone.com joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Scott, I want to go back a couple of weeks here to that press conference where Odell Beckham Jr. was officially introduced. And, you know, some things have come out since. We've heard some things, Von Miller making comments that Odell Beckham Jr. was hurt initially when he was traded, but now he's come to accept it. Well, it really didn't seem that way, Scott. You know, you take a look at that press conference, I don't know, people take out of these things what they will, but he didn't seem uncomfortable to me. I mean, if he was hurt, it seems like he got over it pretty quickly. I thought that the way they presented him, he came off pretty well, and it seems like he's comfortable with what they've got going on here.
Right. I agree with you. It feels to me like these stories and, you know, the whole Colin Cowherd flap and then Baker Mayfield, you know, fired back at Colin after he said Odell did not want to come to Cleveland, and then the Von Miller thing. And it just feels like those are probably accurate, but they're out of date, you know, because Odell admitted that he had to come to grips with the trade, and he'd spent 5 years with the Giants, and he developed friendships and all those kinds of things. So it took him a while to process, but once he did, I didn't get any hesitation during that press conference. And I know that he's on his best behavior and he's trying to set a good tone, but I believe that. Like, it felt genuine to me that if he's going to be somewhere besides the Giants, this is where he would want to be, with best friend Jarvis Landry, with friend Baker Mayfield, who's not only a friend but an up-and-coming quarterback, obviously, you know, in the league viewed as a guy that can win a lot of games in this league and a future star if he isn't already. Adam Henry, the receivers coach, was his receivers coach at LSU and the Giants and recruited him to LSU. So I think this is going to be a comfortable spot for Odell, and it feels like people keep bringing up the fact that he maybe wasn't initially thrilled with the trade, and that seems natural to me. You know, it's a big change for him, but I don't think that's going to carry over to the season. And I also say this, you know, guys are happy when they're winning, and this team has the potential to win, and it's not just Odell. It's a lot of other guys on any roster that if things go south, then maybe they focus on the negatives of the situation. But if you're winning, then everybody gets along and everybody's happy.
Bingo. You know, winning is the biggest remedy for any kind of illness that exists within your clubhouse or your locker room, whatever the case may be. There's no doubt about that. And I don't know. I also feel like we've gotten to that point of the year where you hear some of these things and you almost get the impression people are saying things with the idea to try and sway a fan base one way or the other. I mean, I heard something the other day about someone stating that because during the press conference, Odell Beckham Jr. was, of course, up there with three other Browns, and people were stating that's a sign of insecurity. I don't see how in the world that shows insecurity. I mean, I struggle when I hear these things because it almost gets you to think, are they saying this just to try and get people to either read what they're writing or listen, or, you know, listen to what they're saying? I didn't get the impression that there was any kind of insecurity at that press conference.
No, I'm with you on that. You know, they surrounded him, so number one, it wasn't just about Odell, right? It wasn't me, and the guy who's got a reputation to being a diva. And I think the Browns wanted to make it look like a team setting, and this is why they had Myles Garrett up there, right, who plays on the other side of the ball. Plus, the media wanted to talk to Baker and wanted to talk to Jarvis Landry because Odell has relationships with Jarvis that goes way back to when they were about 16 years old. And with Baker, they started working out together last year and became fast friends. So the media wanted to hear what they had to say about Odell. I think it was a welcoming thing. And, you know, the Browns have become a lightning rod. And, you know, maybe they always have been, but a lot of times it was because they were so bad. And not anymore. You know, the talent's there, and I think they're just going to become a team that everyone wants to talk about. And in today's world, plenty of it will be good, and plenty of it will be bad. And as Browns fans, you know, I know a lot of people have thin skins around here, and I get it, but I think you're going to have to not get so defensive when someone takes a shot at one of your players or even your team, because that's what happens when you're one of the most popular teams in the league.
No question about that. Well, Scott, also the Browns have made a number of signings this offseason. One of the guys that stands up, Morgan Burnett, the safety from the Steelers and Packers. What do you think he can offer this team at his age with this kind of experience?
Well, the first thing he does is he fills a significant need. You know, the Browns traded Jabril Peppers in the Odell trade, and obviously I can't, you know, quibble with that at all. I think it was well worth giving up Jabril Peppers to get Odell Beckham. And then they cut Derek Kindred. So that's the two guys that played pretty much every rep at strong safety last year. So they needed to fill a hole, and Burnett has played that position in the league for a long time, played a lot of playoff games with the Packers, was hurt last year in Pittsburgh, didn't play a bunch, was disappointed in his first year in Pittsburgh after signing a pretty big, you know, free agent contract and asked out of Pittsburgh. So he needs to prove he can stay healthy. He needs to prove that he can still run like he did when he was younger. But at least you have a guy that you can say, here's my day one starter. And they didn't have that beforehand. Now, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if John Dorsey went and added a strong safety in the draft, possibly even at number 49, to, you know, to be that guy down the road or even to compete with Burnett right now. But at least they have a guy there. And that's the thing. When you look at this roster, there are no longer gaping holes. You know, and there have been a strong safety. The only other one I can think of right now is outside linebacker. Jadard Avery's penciled in to be the starter. I think he still needs to prove that he can play in space in the NFL. But everywhere else, you know, and who knows how these guys will turn out this season, but at least you think you know who's going to be your starter. And that's a welcome change from, you know, the last few years.
No question about that. All right, Scott, before we cut you loose, I know you're a big golf guy. Wanted to get your thoughts on what went down in Augusta yesterday. Tiger Woods charging on the final day of play, and I liked it because of the impending weather, they had to change things up and tee off a bit early. Last group, I believe, teed off at 9:20. That was a lot of fun to watch yesterday. Just wanted to get your thoughts on what you saw from Tiger yesterday.
Oh, it was something else. I mean, I'm always glued to – I watch golf no matter what tournament it is. And I'm glued to the Masters every year, and it's always a thrill a minute, and I can't wait to watch it. But yesterday just went up about 12 notches. And to see Tiger do what he did and to make this, to complete this comeback that has been years in the making was remarkable. The celebration was great. You know, it's real emotion coming out of Tiger on the green with his caddy, then with his kids. You know, it's a day that golf fans won't forget anytime soon, and I'm not sure sports fans will forget it, because Tiger is a transcendent personality in sports and, you know, really in the culture, and has been for two decades now. And to see him come back from the depths that he was, you know, is amazing. And then the way it played out, it wasn't just Tiger. It was a great golf tournament with a ton of changes at the top of the leaderboard, big names everywhere. It was sure fun to watch. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, that was a blast. I was glued to my TV set yesterday, especially for those last three or four holes. That was a lot of fun. Scott, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us here today. We look forward to catching up again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.